We are with producer Corey Lovering and director Tim True. Miss Mary Mack is the film, winner of Best Film at the Horror Thriller Film Festival. Great film. Corey, first question. I noticed that the two leads have the same last name as you, so I'm assuming you're related to them.
They are my daughters. They are my daughters indeed. Yes, that was a question about putting my name to the film. I didn't want to take away from their acting abilities, but Tim and I discussed it and we thought that it would be okay.
Yeah, you got them to be in the film. They're fantastic.
Well,
as a producer.
I don't know that I got them to be in the film. I stood behind them. They were already in the film and I kind of stepped in. Wouldn't you say, Tim?
Absolutely, 100%. The way that this film came about was, you know, non-traditional, you know. The pandemic hit in the spring of 2019. And, you know, Corey and I were already friends. I'd already worked with Sid a bunch, actually. I first met her a few years earlier. She was an actress and she was taking workshops in Seattle and that I was teaching. So I got to see a lot of her talent and camera work already. And then when my first feature was being cast, she was just perfect for Anna Camp's younger self to play some flashback stuff. And, you know, I already knew that she could do it, but she brought, you know, so much to it that I, just fell in love with her, you know, commitment, her focus, and just whatever I threw at her, she just brought, you know, she brought even more, you know, than was expected, in those moments.
So let's talk about. Sorry, just sort of interrupt you. I just want to talk about what you were saying about the non-traditional method. So you have COVID happening. You're an actor director in Los Angeles. So COVID's happening. So when did you decide to write this script? Because you had this relationship with Corey, you knew their two daughters were talented. Is this like everything kind of connecting the dots of like doing something during COVID?
Yeah. Corey and I, you know, we keep in touch and we were kind of in the, we're bored. We're trapped inside. What should we do? And so initially what we'd talked about doing was, you know, she was mourning the fact that her girls were going to miss the opportunity to go to like a camp in Los Angeles where they were going to study film acting. And so she and I initially were planning on just doing some Zoom project where I'd write a little ditty and they would rehearse it there. I think Corey was initially going to be the cinematographer and I was going to like direct remotely. So then when I sat down to write something, I remembered an idea that I had for a story, that this short is based on. And I wrote it. And she and I really, really kind of fell in love with it. And it grew into a larger project from there. As we continued to work on it, we realized that we really wanted to make something, you know, beyond just a project for ourselves, that we wanted to maybe, you know, work on this as a proof of concept, you know, and, you know, make a short and just use it as an idea to get the characters integrated, get the plot launched, kind of just get the initial idea out there.
And so it's one location, two actors, and so you're kind of like limited, like you have good limitations during COVID to have, and then you have your cinematographer, I'm assuming, sound person on set. You're kind of using the house as the production design, I'm assuming, as well, right?
Yeah, we were able to keep it all in that house, all interior. The crew was all Northwest, and I believe we had, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 additional crew plus my wife. So,
yeah, 13 in all, including 14? Remote. Including remote. 13 in all, including remote.
Right, right.
So when was this shot? Like what month in during COVID?
August.
August 2020?
2019.
Is that COVID, first summer?
COVID started in 2020.
Did it?
Yeah. It seems it was longer, yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, then it must have been August 2020.
March 12th was the day where everything kind of shut down, 2020.
Really? Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Seems weird, right?
Yeah. It's true, but I don't believe it.
It's funny that, yeah, it was only a year and a half ago. Yeah.
Well, our COVID was.
I was going to say what happened. Like, I know that you guys were the first cases,
We had this pre-alpha COVID, this prescient COVID, I think is what they called it.
Yeah, I thought I was in some sort of strange world when you said that.
Yeah, we were very prepared for it.
So March happened. So then in August you shoot the film. So that's pretty good progress. Like you wrote the scripts, you got. So how did it all come together for you? Were you in Los Angeles at the time? Did you drive up to the Seattle area to shoot it?
Yeah, flew.
You flew, okay.
Flew to Seattle.
In Idaho.
You were in Idaho?
Yeah, we were in Idaho at the time.
We were in Idaho. We drove back to Seattle to shoot it. We all converged in Seattle to shoot it.
Yeah. Why was that? Just out of curiosity.
Why
Seattle?
Initially when I wrote it, I think, you know, Corey was in, they were in transition from Seattle to Idaho. And at the time that I wrote it, they were in Seattle. So that's where I imagined, it happening, and the space was available. It just kind of continued to work out.
So where was the house? Whose house was this, where you shot the film?
It was our old house.
Okay.
Yeah. It was perfect because it was available. It had just been ready for market and uninhabited. The furniture hadn't been moved out yet. So it was an ideal situation because we weren't really displacing anyone. We were just
hoping there were no offers at the time.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, it was a weird area for people to buy houses too. Yeah. So when did you start working with, like, so Corey, did you give Tim's script to your daughters and have them read it? And then
I talked to them about it, but Tim and I had talked about the script and I thought I'd film it honestly with my cell phone. And then I read it and I was like, Tim, this is too good of a script to do this with. We have to do something more. This is incredible. And so it evolved from there. Then my daughters saw the script and they were very excited about it. Very, mm-hmm. very excited about it. Yeah.
Yeah, because they both have an arc. They both have a nice, like, especially the younger daughter. She has like a reversal. Like, I don't want to give away the ending, but which is amazing, by the way.
Well, the most exciting part about it, I think, for all of us, Tim, me, and my daughters, is the possibility of taking it further.
Gotcha. Yeah, you can see this as a feature for sure. Yeah.
A feature or a series, I think, would both work.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. It's
Tim has a great vision.
The bones are there now. It's just opening that world up and getting into it. Because I think, you know, you've got the sibling rivalry dynamic. But, you know, once you get Sid's character, Sarah, you know, if you launch her into, you know, high school, mm-hmm. and boyfriends and mean girls and
parents
yeah. relationships, and that age, and just, you know, just what it's like to be, you know, adolescent. And throwing power and power dynamic within the family, in using this possession, this witch, you know, this witchcraft story as a means of changing the balance of power, and also changing the balance of power in the social setting, the school, and everything mm-hmm. like that, is what's exciting to me.
Yeah, well, the touch on that, like, that's what happens in their dynamic in the film, like the balance of power shifts.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
it's so strong on the older sibling, of course, that you kind of use the, you know, the whole like control of the room, and then she's kind of manipulating her younger daughter, which kids, as kids do, right? And then all of a sudden it just creepily shifts to the other way, right? So
yeah,
that's right. From the feedback, the audience feedback that we've both received from mm-hmm. preteen and teen, they want to know what's happening next.
Yeah,
what's happening next? So that's exciting for us.
Yeah, that was always the intention, was to, you know, end it, you know, elliptically like that, you know, so that so it really does feel like a teaser. It's definitely meant to be more frustrating than satisfying at the end.
You know. So you were talking about Sydney having experience on film, on camera. You worked with her before in your feature. So Lexi, who really has the story arc in this short, like she has the beginning, she has the arc, like she has the journey, kind of the main character of the film, if you kind of from a story structure sense, how did you know that she was able to deliver as an actor?
You know, it wasn't until we started rehearsing, but before I get into that, I will say that I definitely view Sarah's character, Sid's character, as the protagonist in it.
Okay.
And you know, like many heroes who have things come at them and they have to deal with, oftentimes, you know, their arc it looks different. And this part of the story is really, she hasn't had an opportunity to respond yet. Right. Yeah. Now she's just is being affected by it. So we're really, you know, if this had a three act structure, we're talking about an act's worth of story at sure. this point.
You're saying if it's becomes a feature or like our series, like she's the one with the she's the lead character in the film. Or in the series.
She's our hero. Yeah. She's the one that's going to have to resolve things as they escalate.
Yeah. But in this proof of concept, it's the younger daughter who has she changes the most from the beginning, the first frame to the last frame.
Yeah, yeah. She's the antagonist in it. She's the one that starts one way and turns into something.
It goes Michael Corleone on us in a sense.
Yeah, yeah. And so the short film ends where
I know it's your daughter, Corey. Was just there.
The film ends where she's at a very unwieldy place. Yeah. This is bigger than I am. For Sid's character.
So, but she's fantastic. Like she nails her performances. Like
she's wonderful.
It's so great.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's been doing a lot more acting.
Yeah. So did you, for the original questions, like how did you just knew like you were rehearsing a little bit and you kind of figured out that she was able to take your story to another level?
I didn't know until we started rehearsing it. And so okay. The script was already there. But yeah, it was amazing. It was, you know, and she was like, do you want me to do a British accent? And I was like, and I was like, maybe I do. but we didn't make that decision, but we could have.
Yeah.
These girls are, you know, amazingly talented. And that's, you know, that's the kind of the second, wonderful aspect, you know, unintended aspect is like this, you know, this and hopefully more is a wonderful launch for these gals, these sisters, really exciting careers ahead of them.
So Sean Connolly was your cinematographer, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you worked with him before? Cause it's a really nicely done film, nicely shot film.
Yeah, no. He was referred to me and we met and we talked about it and I feel like we got lucky, you know. He's a Portland cinematographer. He does a lot of independent work. He's always busy. Every time I reach out to him, I get the auto response, I am out of town working on such and such a project. So he's He's a worker, and he was just his preparation was fantastic for this. It was a lot more than I expected. We traveled out to the house early, and we had the house to ourselves for a long weekend where we were able to walk the whole piece and get out together and get our shot lists banged out early, and just a lot more prep than you would expect for a short film that he was down for.
Well, there's a lot of shots in this film. I know it's one location, but there's a lot of scenes between the two actors, and you keep going back and forth for the cinematic design, because they kind of need to be alone on frame, right, for the story to work, right? So you have all kinds of shots.
We had full coverage. It was wonderful. We were able to get everything we want. We set aside 5 days for it, 8-hour days, because you're working with kids, and we got done in, I think, 4.5, and we moved it along. There wasn't a lot of need to do too many extra takes, so we were able to get also a lot of coverage.
90 degree days in Seattle with no air conditioning, if you remember.
I think temperature was our biggest challenge. it was pretty seamless for such a small crew. We were Corey was our boots on the ground producer, and we had Deborah Smith, a dear friend of ours, who's
full-time
actress and producer. Remotely produced us and helped keep the shoot organized from afar.
We had great people, and it was probably, extended people that we were able to land because of COVID, right, Tim?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would not absolutely have been available otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Tim, you've been on some pretty big sets, and you've directed the feature. How did you like working on this kind of this kind of boots on the ground, kind of small crew style of filmmaking?
Oh, I loved it. I haven't done a lot of,
you've done acting. You've been on acting on some big productions, I guess, right?
Tons.
Yeah. And I was just saying, I haven't done a ton of independent work, but I also, my filmmaking career as a director, it's just launching. So I don't really have a lot of expectations in terms of, an abundance of resources for my projects, so far. That's hopefully down the road for me. So,
but Tim, yeah. I have to interrupt you. You wrote this in 1 to 2 days, correct? Yeah. You wrote this in 1 to 2 days. Do you know how many awards this has won, Tim? You wrote this in 1 to 2 days. Okay. Congratulations to you.
Was I being too modest or something, Corey?
Yes.
But he did say it was based on a story he had in mind. So it's true.
It's true. I had the general concept of Miss Mary Mack, not applied to these girls, applied to sisters, but just the idea of the song struck me as just the kind of the power of that clapping game that I grew up with as a child. Mostly from afar, as a boy watching girls playing it, but it reminded me while I was driving could similar to Ring Around the Rosie or London Bridge is Falling Down, where it's a children's rhyme, but it has some historical significance and kind of an ugly, scary.
Significance.
Yeah. And so I paid attention to the lyrics of it, and it feels very dark and kind of, potentially metaphoric or representing something else that was happening beyond, deeper than the lyrics themselves. And so that idea existed, and it kind of popped out with the girls when I was like, what to write? And
That's awesome.
Kind of fell together in a nice way.
And then so did you send it out and reworked it a little bit? Or did you what you wrote is what it is, like?
I wrote a longer version, and that had a climax to it, but it involved special effects and you know, it was a lot more dynamic mm-hmm. in that way. And so we decided to, you know, to make this more manageable.
Yeah.
And so I went with this kind of more, you know, kind of, as I said, elliptical ending. And yeah, no, but there was definitely some cleaning up of it. The story didn't change much at all, though.
It's really nicely put together film. I don't know, you guys, I'm sure you guys watched the audience feedback. We send the audience feedback video to you. What did you think of the thoughts of the film?
Yeah, that was really wonderful to hear that. It's nice to be, you know, affirmed, you know, in terms of hearing their feedback, and so satisfying to see what landed, you know, to see how much of what our intentions were with the project and how much of it resonated with the audience.
And I'll tell you, I played it for Sydney and Lexi, Sarah and Izzy, and they were jumping up over the moon excited. It was like, it was a real film, you know, because it's COVID.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They haven't really been able to connect with audiences.
Yeah.
So it's, wow, people are really watching and liking it.
So gave them context of like of an audience, that there's an actual audience.
It made it feel more real to them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good to hear. I love hearing that. So I'm glad that was my next question. If they got to see the audience feedback. So that's so good. Cause Tim, you, the speak of the girls is that, like, besides the opening shot, which is kind of like a pan shot of like all the books and kind of showing, setting up her room as location, it's really just like one and two shots and a lot of like tripod shots of giving the actors, like making them tell the story. Like the camera doesn't tell the story, the actors tell in its basic sense. Like you gave these girls like this film in so many ways. Like they delivered it for you too, I guess too, right?
Absolutely, 100%, yeah. And I think that comes from my theater background. I didn't start in film as an actor. And so, you know, I'm used to this longer form storytelling, you know, where you rehearse for 5 weeks and you do one take of 90 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
and so, you know, coming from that actor's perspective, I'm used to storytelling in that way. So I think I'm always going to be, leaning towards that. And I think there's something about watching an actor go through it, like a sustained moment. There's something from the audience's perspective where you see that there's no net in their performance.
Yeah.
You know, and you're seeing them, you know, go through an entire arc of a moment without, you know.
Yes.
It's the humor lands, you know, in a stronger way. The terror, I think, is stronger. If you look at some of your favorite horror films, and that's happening too, you know, right now more than Ari Aster and some of the, you know, the great filmmakers of that genre right now, there's a lot of like just holding the camera, you know, and just watching the action, you know.
Yeah, it's so true. So post-production, so you finish the film in 4.5 days. And then, so tell me about your score, your sound. It's your music. It's awesome. It's like, where did you get the music from?
Yeah. Well, you know, we, I mean, the thing that I focused on was the clapping, you know, for the, I guess the heart, of the music. And I just like the idea of the clapping and the escalation of the clapping, and also first of all rhythmically, you know, at the top of the film, and then later on when we're getting building in towards the end, the idea of, you know, of pace, you know, using that as tension. But working with Sean Barrett was really wonderful because he was able to take the song, the clapping game song, Miss Mary Mac, and the tune of it, and get in there and bring it more orchestration, you know, and support it. And that was actually his wife doing the singing, and then and then digitally manipulating it to sound like a child's voice.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's extremely talented.
He's like, great. He's in LA, and I've worked with him on a couple things now, and he's terrific.
Make sure he works on this film when it becomes a feature or a TV series.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then who edited the film? Did someone edit the film besides yourself? Yes.
Yeah. Kevin Bureau out of is an editor out of New York, who's fantastic in his own right. And I believe he's an assistant editor on the upcoming Spielberg remake of West Side Story.
Let's say, yeah, it's coming out in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That's right.
So we were really lucky to have him. And he was great. He ended up becoming, you know, also wearing the hat of the post-production supervisor.
Gotcha.
He became our point person for all of the post.
So you're one degree away from Spielberg then.
Yeah, exactly. He's 1 degree away from me.
There you go. I like that. You worked with Meryl Streep, right? Like, so on, what's that, Big Little Lies? But did you have a scene with her or no?
I didn't. You know, my four episodes were in the first season, and she didn't.
Oh, I thought you. Okay, so sorry, I apologize.
That's okay. I was shooting Here a While when they called me for season two, and I couldn't get out of the director's chair for it.
Gotcha.
So I told Meryl, as Meryl, I'd love to work with you. She begged me, but I had to see that project through.
Yeah. I was just thinking the Mount Rushmore of like of our era, like, or the last 50 years. Like, I was trying to connect the dots of like your work with Spielberg and then Meryl Streep and then.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So there's some close calls in there.
Yeah.
Not quite Mount Rushmore, you know.
No, but it's listen, you're on your way, because this is is there any like meetings or talk about this show being a feature or a series, or are you guys just doing the festival circuit and you'll kind of go from there?
We haven't gotten into any conversations yet. Part of it, you know, is the, you know, COVID is also kind of closed off the industry in a way that they're just now starting to open up in terms of like agencies and representation and
gotcha.
All that stuff that I'm not repped as a director, you know, right now. So in terms of the idea of, you know, having people who can advocate for me and help set up meetings, like that's not, I don't have that in place right now. So Corey and I are just, you know, kind of on our own right now. And we're going to develop it together and be ready when meetings come. And in the meantime, also just try to do it ourselves.
Yeah. And we're grateful for these kinds of platforms to create kind of that, interest.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm glad to see that. It's because, you do have options, I guess, right? You could make it an independent feature like you did with your other feature.
Yep.
And then you have a real body of work, and then you'll definitely get wrapped after that. And then,
that's, I think that just kind of takes care of itself at the pace that it's meant to be.
Yeah.
I think that the function, you know, my job is just to continue to create in whatever way that I can.
Yeah. Or I'm thinking if I was like whoever, I'm sure you have smarter people to talk to than me, but it's like, or you can start directing something, get some people. Yeah. Thank you.
I do not have smart people.
And I'm saying that you could just get someone like start directing television shows and kind of get your feet wet with that. And then that kind of helps you. Yeah. The sort of like, those are sort of the moves you can make, I guess, right? As in someone in your position.
When ret, things can start to happen. It's definitely, you know, it's a business where I don't know what you would compare it to, but maybe dating in New York City, where at least, you know, back in the 90s, what I was aware of was gals wouldn't want to gals wouldn't want to date a guy unless they'd been introduced to them by somebody they knew, that there was kind of that that introduction that so like, okay, so you know, he's connected to this other person I know.
And I don't think that was just New York City, Tim.
I was at that age where I was first aware of that dynamic.
But to jump on that analogy, everybody just goes on a phone and clicks something, and then they meet at a hotel room, right? So,
but what I'm saying is an agent is really wonderful for that introduction.
No, I know. I'm just saying, but now it seems like things are just happening a lot faster. There's no introduction needed. People just get things done, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe use the dating analogy. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Are so powerfully, wonderfully talented that anybody listening to this should try to connect with you and rep you, because you're amazing.
Well, thank you for saying that.
You are.
He's blushing a little bit right now. But
I'm blushing. Can you hear it?
Yeah, trying to stay cool. It's that trying to stay cool, like, blushing moment.
It's very kind of you. Definitely, you know, back to the story, I think it would be really, I think it's a great idea. It's an exciting
idea. It is.
I really love the idea of taking, you know, that if you saw that movie Eighth Grade that Bo Burnham did, it's really a beautiful movie. And I like the idea of folding, you know, that discomfort and that struggle that character had in that film, and how she, you know, was pushing through adolescence and taking this genre and taking, you know, this witchcraft story and folding those two together, I think would be really interesting, you know, either in a feature length or in a longer form, you know, series.
So to finish off, tell me, Corey, what about your daughters, who are, like we've talked about it time and time again, they're fantastic. Are they repped? Are they getting more work? Are they getting more of a body of work? I know it's tough because they're child actors and you don't want to push them too much, right? You want them to have a life and...
No, they're both repped and they're both getting work. Sydney, the older one, she's had braces. And so that's apparently a big no-no in Hollywood. So she's been on a bit of a pause. The younger one, Lexi, who's played, you know, Izzy in this, she's actually been getting quite a few opportunities lately. You'll see her on, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say, but some big things on some networks coming up. Just little things.
She was in This Is Us.
This Is Us, yeah.
She had a role in This Is Us just a couple months back.
Wow, that's a pretty big show.
Yeah.
No, I think, and she's having a lot of fun with it. And Sydney, I think she's going to be ramping up, and they both love it. And what I'll say about them, which is different from me, is neither of them like to watch themselves on television or film or whatever. They just like the work, and I love watching them. I just like, let's watch it again. No, I don't want to see it, Mom.
Tim, as an actor, you know that's going to change, right? They're going to have to start watching themselves soon.
Well, you do. You have to watch it, but yeah. The feeling doesn't go away. You know, there's usually a moment or two that I'm curious about, like how did that get edited?
Yeah.
But beyond that, the novelty of watching yourself on camera, on film, wears off pretty quick. Just becomes where you just. Yeah, you just hate it for so many reasons.
Yeah, but because you have to understand how the film acting process works, because they are manipulating your performance a little bit, and you got to figure out what they're doing in the editing room with what you did on set, and then seeing it later on, I guess, right?
Yeah,
it takes you to another level as an actor.
Yeah, there's a certain, to it, but some of it is just that discomfort with just,
of course,
do your work on camera regardless of happening post, just that feeling of, ooh, I don't want to look at myself.
Yeah. All right, guys, thank you so much for this conversation. It was fantastic. It's a good time to end. Your bandwidth's getting a little bit low. We're barely hearing you now. So I appreciate your time and your time. Like I said, this is a fantastic film. Congrats on the win from our festival. Hope you enjoyed the experience. And let's talk again when it becomes a TV series or a feature film, and we'll get the girls on as well. And if they're allowed to, and we could talk more.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Thank you.
You too.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much to Corey and Tim for that wonderful conversation about them making their beautiful short film. This is a really solid film from a storytelling standpoint, from a written standpoint. And I know Corey is just championing Tim all she can, but she kind of brought this film together in many ways, and she was a true producer. And you know, Tim will get the accolades, her daughters will get the accolades, but she was the driving force to bring this film home, and let's not forget that. And people, you know, there's people have written many of great script. There's been many a talented actors, but if they're not in an actual film and the film doesn't actually get made, then you know it doesn't really matter, right? They're just dust in the wind. But it's all about the people that bring it together, that kind of like produce and bring it all together. So you can never forget that. I know that we tend to like center on more of the interesting stories, the creative stories, the director, the actors, of course, and especially in the mainstream world. But you know, like there's so many variables and luck, chances, and opportunities that make that happen. And her daughters, well, you know, you have to give them kudos. They're child actors. They seem to really enjoyed interacting with each other in this film, and I wish this film the best. It's pretty solid, and it could make for a pretty great TV series. But I kind of see more of a movie, like a 2-hour kind of movie, and then it becomes like a franchise. And then as the daughters get older, they can you know that's what the great thing about movies, the gift keeps on giving. And if you make a really solid movie, then people will watch it and rewatch it forever. I understand though that we're in the market of the limited series and the TV series where people want to binge watch, but let's not forget the movie, especially in this genre, in the thriller horror genre. Let's not forget the movie, because it will always stand the test of time. It's almost like football is the stand, you know, football is the number one sport in America, because I'm Canadian and give an American analogy. Football is the number one sport. It's very popular. It's because it's got that kind of like war mentality and that kind of like chess-like with violence kind of mentality that's more in the American true test of what's going on in Americana now. But remember baseball. Baseball is still the probably arguably the better sport. It doesn't have a clock. It's more poetic. It's more creative. And it keeps staying the test of time. It's like there's been many other sports, but baseball in Americana keeps going and going and going. Sometimes it's number one, sometimes it's number two, but it keeps streaming along. That's what I think about movies. It's like, yeah, you got the streaming and you got the TV shows, but don't forget movies, because movies will always stay the test of time, like baseball will. That's my 2 cents. I'll see you tomorrow.
Three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Schlemiel, Schlemazel.